Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. I'm Kevin Zimmerman. Birthday boy Kellen Olsen's here too. He took the whole week off and has decided to come in for his birthday. And now I feel bad, but I don't because he kind of threw it out there. Happy birthday.
I love talking about the Suns, man. Thank you. It's just another day for me. It's the birthday, but I like talking about the Suns. I like doing podcasts. So this feels like something I would like to do on my birthday. Do you know what I mean?
It's like completely like full tank Kellen Olsen today.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I just took 3 days off because I have extra vacation days. Played a lot of Spider-Man on PS4. It's good stuff. Played the new Call of Duty Battle Royale. No one cares about this, what I'm saying at all. Video game people might little care. I've been playing a lot of video games, watching Netflix, and enjoying myself. That's
the only video game I play is Towerfall, which is like this thing that's like pixelated on the PS4, and you shoot each other with arrows, which
sounds
incredibly
riveting.
Addicting. I'm like an old person now. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
I'm still like a 15-year-old when it comes to video games for now, but we'll see.
I got lost after NFL Blitz 2000. It's fun.
As you should. What are the all-time
greats? I don't know which one of these things is worse.
Is that the one with Cordell Stewart on the cover? Is that the one you're talking about?
I play with Cordell Stewart, so I actually don't know, but probably.
That's so good. Like NBA Street, NFL Street, those were the days.
Those were the days. Not a good day. Devin Booker had surgery on, Monday on his hand. We haven't talked about this because we thought it wasn't a thing anymore. So he played, if you remember, I don't even know off the top of my head, back half of the season almost with a hand injury, and it cost him like 10-plus games at the end. And people were even like, well, are they just tanking? He said, no, I'm actually hurt. Then he went this summer, played with USA Basketball, has been, he's been playing pickup everywhere. Like, that's kind of the thing that you see great players is they draw the attention when they play pickup. You always know where they are every week. It's like, oh, he's in Vegas, he's in New York, he's in San Diego, whatever. And then suddenly he's hurt. And this raised questions.
Oh, I get to do the conspiracy theory stuff? Sure.
Yeah, do you want to?
Absolutely, I'll do it. Because I'm the lead proponent of this right now. I haven't really talked about it on Twitter or anything, but I have questions about this. I have a lot of questions about this. This has not been 100% confirmed by the team or Booker or anything, but it's on pretty good authority from what I've heard that this hand thing has been a thing for him since mid-January. In terms of during the season, it was a thing since mid-January. He re-aggravated it by jamming it in a practice in mid-March. That's when we officially knew. We heard that he had jammed it. Following game against Utah, he shoots 3-for-18, and it's like, oh, well, that seems like it's pretty bad then.
Yeah.
And then they basically decided you have to play with a splint, or you don't have to play with a splint, sorry, you have to have the splint in and until you can not have the splint for you to play again. So then he kept going out there, kept testing the hand. We kept asking him as he walked off the court for him, so you going to play today? He's like, probably not. It was just one of those things. So then fast forward, we don't really hear much about it at all. We just assume that it is naturally healed. He's at Team USA and everything. 2 weeks ago, he posted an Instagram video of him using a jugs machine and running routes like a football wide receiver. And that's like catching on a jugs machine. That's really using your hands. That's a lot of force coming to your hands. So me, lead detective Kellen, would assume that his hand was fine at that specific date whenever that was recorded. So whether it was re-aggravation over practice like McDonough said, or it's not what McDonough said, and he wasn't 100% being truthful when he talked to Bickley and Murata, and it was something else, remains to be seen. My theory on this is respect greatly to Adrian Wojnarowski, Shams Charania, Mark Stein, Sam Amick, etc. John Gambadoro broke the story for us after the Cardinals game, like 4 o'clock on Sunday.
It's always during the Cardinals game.
4 o'clock, 4:30 on Sunday. It's always during the Cardinals game. That was a fun day for me. So we break the story. That is a type of story where Woj or one of those guys would pick it up pretty quickly. Woj didn't really have anything on it for about an hour and a half, 2 hours. And to me, Woj is the guy who has like 15 people he's going to call within a half an hour, whatever. ESPN didn't post their story until 4 hours later. And the details that they had was that it was a re-aggravation. The surgery was considered to be minor.
Right. That's
And that was essentially it. And the anecdote on the bottom, their little listing was that it was both Mark Spears and Woj who had reported on that story. So the two of them came together and got those two facts. Mark Spears and Adrian Wojnarowski, who break everything in this sport. And that, those are the details they got.
I think
And to me,
yeah, go ahead.
That adds up to Shams didn't even like have anything on it until it happened. To me, that adds up to people aren't talking about this, and read into that what you will. I'm going to read into it with what I will, which is something else happened here. Someone did something stupid. They missed something. Someone messed up in some sort of way. That is what I will say on this. I could be 100% wrong, and he could have re-aggravated it over time in practice and open runs and torn a ligament in his hand by re-aggravating it, and it wasn't a single incident. That's the thing McDonough said. It wasn't a single incident. I don't like calling people liars, but I don't believe him.
I won't go that far because I think they don't report anything because no one knows. I think the Suns probably did find out after that practice. And however it happened, it was a thing before that practice. Like, if he didn't see an incident. But the thing is about it is they were talking last end of last year, like, he caught the ball and it would just get messed up again. So, like, that if it's not healed right or whatever needed to be happening surgery-wise, if that's all it took, then it could have been an actual incident where it was just like one time. I don't know enough about the metaphalangeal whatever joint, but either way, we can all agree it's bad news. You have a new coach coming in. You would like to think, we'll get into this in a second, they get a point guard, a starting caliber point guard. They start training camp all healthy and learning Igor's system around their key player, which they're not going to have now. His six-week projection goes into the season, basically. So we're once again kind of like last year, which we didn't know at this point of last year. We're at the point where it's like training camps almost, I'm not going to say it's worthless, but it's just completely different, and they're going to learn the offense and all that great stuff, but you're not going to have that cohesiveness and that consistency playing with your best player, which seems like it's a big unfortunate hole.
Well, the offense is all about ball movement and people moving off the ball, so it's not something that they're going to run around Booker. So they're still going to, everyone's still going to experience that, but there's going to be a learning curve and an adjustment when, if he comes back 4 games, 5 games in, he comes in as this dominant force because that's what he is and takes 20 shots and he just changes things. He's going to have to find himself in the offense more. It's going to be a little more difficult for him to settle in.
And chemistry, that is, yeah.
And that's something that just completely negates what this entire offseason has been about. They basically looked at the roster last season and said, we are going to do whatever it takes to get defense and shooting on this team. We'll talk about this in a bit, but J.J. Redick revealed a little tidbit on a podcast appearance that the Suns were close to signing him after.
He didn't say close.
What did he say?
He basically was like, they called.
They called?
And they would have had to make a trade because it was after Ariza. So they didn't have cap space. They would have probably had to trade Dudley in that case. But they were interested. Like that, and that just proves your point, yeah.
And he would have backed up Booker. He would have like come off the bench, essentially. And they were willing to do that because they're so willing to add shooting and add defense and have Igor come in with this new system, new number one pick in. This is all about not change, but just not even a fresh start, I would call it. It's just about now actually trending upward.
Yeah.
They need to start that right away and immediately. That is the whole reason for, they have like four wings right now. They're like, we need shooting and defense. These two guys can do shooting and defense. Yes, we have TJ and Josh, but that's what we need. We're adding these two guys. So now that's just on pause for now. And look, it could add up to something where it helps them or it doesn't help them get off to as good of a start as they want. Now they're 3-8 or whatever, and that starts to already add up to losing habits and everything like that, and now you're just right back to where you started, really.
It's not good. But you
it's
need,
really bad.
You need the 50th best player in the NBA. You do.
Yeah.
Sports Illustrated called Devin Booker the 50th in their top 100 ratings.
I didn't read it because it was going to infuriate me. What did Golliver write to his explanation?
In short.
Or say. Sorry, I think he said it and someone transcribed it.
In short, it was he's not on a winning team and he plays bad defense.
Didn't he say he doesn't watch the Suns or something?
No, he said it, no one else does.
No one else does.
No one watches the Suns in his Reddit explanation. But the explanation putting him behind what? It was like Robert Covington right behind Eric Gordon was basically he's not on a winning team and he plays bad defense, which is I see it the opposite way. And this is where like we talked about it earlier in the summer where it was like how you judge Jason Tatum. Like Jason Tatum was way up on that list. Why is he way up on that list? If you threw Jason Tatum in the Suns roster in place of Booker last year, I do not think he would do well. He would look bad. He would be exposed. And like to me, that's my argument for saying that's silly because the lens of on a losing team, especially that bad of a team where you have like 7 point guards and like all but two, I think, are not on NBA rosters, is just like you can't say it's Devin Booker's fault. He's bad at defense that badly. Like, I know the analytics are not helpful, but are the analytics helpful for a guy Golliver looks at every day, Damian Lillard? Probably not. They might be a... I don't know. To me, it's just like that's why I infuriate Suns fans because this keeps coming up. And like that's why I always go at Jason Tatum. Sorry, Jason Tatum. I like Jason Tatum, but just the lens of him playing on the Celtics or Jaylen Brown. If you had to start at ground zero, would you rather have Jason Tatum, Devin Booker, Jaylen Brown? Like Jaylen Brown is and Jason Tatum, I don't think are as great a piece as if you are starting from scratch.
If Robert Covington's on the Suns, he's not even in the top 100 of that list.
Right.
No way. Eric Gordon's 80, 90.
Yeah.
He's probably putting up like 20, 25 a game over here.
Yeah.
People are talking about how underrated he is or something. That's... Those are lists that I have lots of feelings about because they generate discussion like this and...
That's what they're supposed to do, yeah.
And I do not interact with them because that is what they are designed to do. Everyone who is quote tweeting or discussing what Golliver said is letting him win is a really strong way of saying it, but it's letting the people who want those lists out to win because that is exactly what they want. They want people to get riled up about it. That is why they are around every year. We did a similar thing just because it was the off season and it was in its own Suns bubble, but it was also like it generates discussion and people talk about it. And that's the same thing with these lists. So I don't want to attack anyone too hard because they're doing their job and they're ranking the top 100 every year because this is why. This is exactly why. I agree with everything you said. It's absurd to me to rank players in that way. And especially just put Tatum on this like super mega pedestal because he proved himself in the playoffs, which is something we've talked about on the podcast before that I valued a lot. But at the same time, if we're talking about ranking the players, that I don't understand how you can actually watch him play over the course of the season, watch Booker play over the season, watch him in games, watch the full games, and not see him as like a top 35, 30 player in the league right now. I don't understand. I don't understand what else he has to do. People were in mentions day or two ago saying like his playmaking's not as good. That's the part right there where I curse. That's that's just wrong. All the analytics and stats and everything back up that he's right up there with all the guys that he's being mentioned that he's not as good as Mitchell, Murray, whoever. He scored efficiently despite not having a real point guard the entire year.
No shooting.
No spacing. This is why I didn't want to talk about it, because I wrote about this 9 months ago.
Yeah.
I wrote an introductory piece on this exact topic entering the season, that, and then I wrote a thing again when he was up for All-Star in like January, and you just got to think about the starting lineup that they would run out there. Tyson Chandler took 3 shots outside of the restricted area the entire year leading into January. TJ Warren was shooting 18% from 3. Tyler Ulis and Josh Jackson were the other, or not Josh Jackson, sorry. Chris, was Chris starting then? I'm confused. Bender?
Who can say?
What's happening in my brain right now?
When? Sorry, I'm looking at
in like January
tweet.
Of last year, who was starting? Warren, Ulis.
Oh, I have no idea.
Warren, Ulis, Chandler. And
it was such a rotating...
It was rotating a lot. I think it was Bender or Chris. It was Chris. I remember it was Chris because I had a stat in there that was like he averages like 0.7 dribbles per touch. He just doesn't dribble.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous if you actually... Again, don't want to call people lazy, but if you actually put in the time to watch all these players, which is really, really tough to do, but if you watch them in every situation, you would see what we are seeing. And you're just not seeing it. People are wrong on this. They're just wrong. They're really wrong. I had the tweet yesterday where it's, we are going to put all these together in like 3 years' time, 4 years' time, when the Suns are actually winning, because that is when they will be actually out of excuses. And that excuse is valid. They have to win with him.
Yeah.
He also has to have a roster that doesn't have half G League players.
Right.
And doesn't have 5 wings and no point guard right now. He needs that to win games. He's 21 years old, by the way. Is he supposed to be leading a team to 55 wins? And I understand that's what he has to do to get to that level and be seen in that way.
When did James Harden get to the Rockets? He was, what, maybe 24? Four,
yeah,
ish. That's 3 years down the road, and he was already really good. And he spent 2 years in college and still sat behind some guys and was effective off the bench for a good team. But like, he didn't even get to Houston to prove, like, okay, I can take a team to the next level. And he had a competent roster around him with a decent enough plan, I guess. Like, they had dudes. It was an NBA roster.
The Jazz thing is what infuriates me the most, because just because Mitchell plays defense, we're going to act like if you flipped Booker and Mitchell, wouldn't be the same exact result.
Yeah.
Booker kills OKC in that series. He destroys them.
Yeah.
With that roster, like, of course he does. I think that's what happens when you take a young player of that, like, stardom level and put him...
on a good team.
On a good team with really good players around him, with Rudy Gobert, with Ricky Rubio, with Jay Crowder, with Joe Ingles, with Derek Favors. That's what happens. They are really, really good. Well, again, we'll just have to wait. It'll be 3 or 4 years away. We'll do the podcast. We'll hold a party. Everyone's invited. But
my favorite tweet was from Addy Joseph, he's an editor at CBS. He said, I'll just say this. On aggregate, the people who work in the NBA like him more than the people who write about the NBA, which I thought was a really good summation. Like, that's why he's on, you know, practicing with the national team as one of, like, a few guys who are below 25 years old, and he's the youngest guy there. Because, like, that's why we have counted, like, Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, Kevin Durant. List goes on of guys who will go out of their way to be like, oh, a young guy who I think is going to be good in the future, that guy. Because they see it, they play against him. So
there's a fallacy, I don't know if I'm using this word correctly, but I think there's a fallacy in the league where just because so many GMs and owners do stupid things that everyone thinks the league is so stupid, but they're ahead of us on nearly everything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So when Keith Pompey goes up to Brett Brown before the Suns game in December and asks, do you think Devin Booker has the amount of respect he should, averaging 25 points a game, his team's not getting much attention, and Brett Brown looked at him like, not like you're an idiot, but just with a perplexed look. He like clearly respects Pompey or whatever, and he's just like, And then he like thought about what he was going to say. And he was just like, his answer was basically like, I don't know about you media guys, but like he is super respected in our league. And that was the game where he got double teamed consistently. And it's
literal, like you're in seventh grade and there's a kid who's like twice as big as everyone and as skilled and you double team. Yeah. If that's not respect, that's one of the things. It's just like, this is material respect. I am literally double teaming you in the NBA.
We're going to make a podcast pact right now. I'm going to make a podcast pact. We are
this
done.
This is the last time.
This is the last time.
I'm sorry I grumped you on your birthday, man.
No, this is fine. With the
burning
with the
dong.
Meme. Yeah, with the meme. This is the last time we are going to talk about this until it is to a point where the argument is there and he's still not getting the respect. If the Suns are winning, or if he's just putting up crazy insane numbers and he's still not getting respect, that's when we'll talk about like why is he not getting more respect around the league. But in terms of what he is right now and him not being respected like this, we're done talking about this.
I see it as being like Harden or even Amari when he was in the Suns. Like everyone would complain and all day, like even Suns fans, some of them, about how bad the defense was from Amari. People complain about Harden. But it's like, at some point, you might be right. Like, Amari wasn't great at defense. James Harden lags sometimes. But at some point, you just be like, that doesn't mean he's not a top player in the league. Like, Amari Stoudemire, I'm going to take all those flaws. James Harden, is he a top 3-4 player? I will take his lack of defense and sometimes disappearing in the playoffs to have him on my team if I'm the Rockets. Or any other team. So I think that's where we're going with this. And we haven't even been proven that Booker's actually, he's like not great on defense, but you know, it's hard to tell.
He is the entire reason why I don't do the box plus minus stuff. It's just,
some of those, it's the same thing. Like putting together those lists is the same thing as some of those advanced stats, which they're important and they show things. Like I think what's the ESPN's Hollinger's stat once, it's not war, what is it,
real box plus minus?
Yeah,
is that
it wasn't
RPM?
It was RPM, I think. And I think the offensive RPM for Channing Frye was like top 15 or something in the league one of the years he was on the Suns, and it was like in between, you know, LeBron and Kobe and all those guys. And it's like, this is an anomaly, probably something with algorithms like super values Channing Frye, but that shows like how important he is for the Suns, but he's not like a top 15 player.
We are a defense is valuable podcast. We don't ignore the value of defense. There's one game where like Langston Galloway cooked him in crunch time, and that's the only time I can remember where his defense actually cost the Suns a game. I just want to send Golliver and all those guys DVDs and just send them three games. Just send them the Philly game from last year and send them two other games and just be like, look at this. This is what he was doing all year. When we were writing the injury stories, I kind of realized how good he was last year, and I kind of forgot. I would go into a phase where I was kind of being a troll at some points because I was just like, "You're telling me this guy's not one of the 12 best players in the Western Conference?" Ha ha! Like during games, just because of the stuff he was doing. Remember that game in Portland? He had 35-6 or something. And there was a minute left and Portland just double-teamed him and the Suns lost because they double-teamed him. And it was like, oh, yeah, well, yeah, he's 20. What can you do? And there were just game after game like that. It's he missed 2 weeks because of the adductor injury. He comes back in the first four games. He averages 36.
Yeah. It's like, oh.
4-5. It's like,
fresh legs, huh, guy?
Yeah, that's what it looks like. I will say, I think one thing we should talk about with him in whole before we go, there's low-key he gets hurt a lot stuff going on here. He had thing after thing last year, and now there's the hand, and now we will have to see how it goes this year. But if this is another year where he's playing like 50 to 60 games, this is something we're actually gonna have to talk about.
Yeah,
is his health, because he had a variety of things last year, and if he
also played through most of those things until the hand, so
exactly, which
yeah,
can't really help. And is he gonna, this is speculation after like it happens, but is he going to be like a Kyrie type of guy where you just can't trust him to play 95 plus games? So like if he plays 75 to 80 and you're going to the playoffs, is he going to break down? Is he going to be that type of player? But that just to put a cap on the whole thing, the whole Booker thing, it's a big bummer, and everyone's energy properly reflected how such a good offseason can just be go splat like that, and everyone's like, it's only 3 or 4 games, and it's not really about that. It's about going into
camp.
It's going into opening night on national TV with your team, beating the Mavericks, showing like this is where we're doing something positive here, we're trending upward, and they're not going to be able to do that because their starting backcourt is going to be Josh Jackson and Mikal Bridges.
Point Jackson.
Yeah, let's talk about point guard now. What are they doing?
So Ryan McDonough came on the radio and said, he used the words, if I'm remembering correctly, I actually don't remember the words. Where are the words? He said they weren't rushing it, basically. And he used strategic was one of the words.
And he,
to me, that was code for, yeah, guys, we know we're doing it, but remember, we have, what, then it was about a month? Well, it's a month now. 6 weeks, let's say. 5 weeks from when he said it. Yeah, he said 5 weeks. We have 5 weeks to see what's happening. And look, we talked about it last time. The market, the NBA market doesn't have trades right now because if you're that desperate, then you're going to lose a trade. And that's what the Suns are trying not to do. They're not pushing the panic button right now because they can't. It's going to be even worse than if they do it like before opening night. So that said, I think that's just where we are.
The astute point a couple people made, I think Max was one of them on Twitter, that was no one wants to give up one of their point guards right now because the season's coming up. And
yeah,
it's a pretty big luxury to teams to have a valuable second or third string point guard right now. It's valuable for the Clippers to have Patrick Beverley and Milos and Shea and all these guys. It might be
they have too many.
They do have too many, but it's still a luxury at the same time. It's like they don't have to rush Shea at all. And if depending on how Shea develops, like, look, if he comes out in the first 2 weeks and he looks like he's ready to start, then you're fine with dealing these guys. But they probably don't know that right now, unless you're the Suns and you just think Elie Okobo is ready to start opening night. I'm making jokes. I am joking about this whole starting whoever is going to start.
I'm cringing.
I still believe that the trade is coming, but it's just every day it's killing me. I thought it was going to happen this week.
Oh, I did. Yeah, no.
Yeah.
It was going to happen right after they traded Knight, or it's not going to happen for a long time, I thought. I feel like, yeah, you just can't do it right now. No team's going to give you a decent deal right now. They realize how desperate the Suns are, and we talked about it last time. They're in a pickle. I think that's where we're at. And I think the interesting part about what McDonough said was why they made that trade, which was basically the players they got in return fit better with Igor's offense, which is interesting because I thought Brandon Knight would actually do pretty well in his offense. Like,
what's their record through 10 games if this is their roster right now? No, 15.
I'm
15.
Trying to
let's
think
go
of
a little bit later.
I don't even know. Past like five.
I don't think they get over like 4 wins.
No. Maybe they win against Dallas twice. They play Dallas twice, right? They could even beat the Lakers, and I still am not very confident in the rest of it.
So you go 4-11, you're on pace for 5 or 6 wins through 20 games. You're on pace for 24 wins. They can't win under 30 games.
Oh, they very well could, Kellen.
No, I mean for what they want to do, they can't win under 30 games. I don't.
They also can't get out of what they're doing, though. Like, they have to stick to it, even if they don't.
So let's operate under the assumption that this is going to be their rotation heading into the first game of the season.
Okay.
That would be an amazing, catastrophic strong. Be an amazing failure for this to be the point guard rotation. It's unacceptable. That's what it is.
Yeah.
It would be amazingly unacceptable because what we just talked about with what they're trying to do. And this is your point guard rotation? Look, maybe we're wrong, and maybe Point Book is the answer. And maybe when they were going after J.J. Redick, they thought Point Book and Redick and Ariza or whatever, and maybe that's what they're running. now they have to be right about Point Book. And if they're right about Point Book, or if they're right about
this current...
They still
don't have a point guard on opening night.
Yeah. Or if they're right about this point guard rotation, then we're wrong and we look like idiots, I guess. But is Isaiah Cannon going to start opening night? How is that a thing? How is that a thing with what they're trying to do right now? How is that actually a thing?
I think they're going to make a trade.
Yeah.
I don't even know if we should operate under what you just said, like assuming this is the roster, because that team might not win until Booker comes back. But yeah, like I think you gotta to save face right now, it's go. Patrick Beverley cannot cost that much. He's had serious knee injury, basically two. He had, I think it was meniscus and microfracture, something like that. And he's had past knee injuries. He cannot be that costly.
Yeah, let's scratch what I just talked about and instead talk about why...
It's too dark.
Why do you think it's taking too long? Why do you think it's taking this long? Because
I just don't think it's on the market's not even open. Everyone's like, all right, shoot us what you want to trade, Ryan McDonough. Second round pick for Pat Bev? They're like, ha, maybe call us back when you have a better offer. Click, that's it. Like, there's no reason for... You just said there's no reason for other teams to make trades. They know the Suns have to.
So you think the Suns aren't giving incentive to other teams when they're making said offers?
Yeah.
When they're literally in because, the this is fine meme right now.
Yeah. Because they can't. Like, can you... They're in a position where they can't look like they're desperate, but they also need to be desperate, which is a no-win situation. And look, a team like the Clippers, which is why I keep bringing them up, will be like, yeah, we have no use for like Patrick Beverley if we have all these guards. They have so many guards.
So what do you think the trade's going to be then? Is it just going to be them taking a loss like we talked about last time?
That's why the Beverley thing makes sense, because you might not, a second round pick may be enough. That's what they got for Elfrid Payton or traded away for Elfrid Payton. So you do that for Patrick Beverley. He's had injuries. There are young guys they want to develop. But yeah, if you go elsewhere and look at like Corey Joseph, even Spencer Dinwiddie, you might run into a team saying, we value him a lot. What are you going to give us that's worthwhile? We're trying to rebuild too, the Nets would say. Pacers want point guard depth, even though they drafted Aaron Holiday because they had a good run last year. Yeah, there just aren't options is what I'm getting at.
Man, if they wind up doing one of these deals and this is still the wing rotation... Like if TJ Warren or Josh Jackson is not in this, or Mikal Bridges, I don't even want to talk about the thought of them trading Mikal Bridges, but if one of those three guys is in this deal or isn't in this deal, I am mind blown by them signing Trevor Ariza and not signing a point guard. That's incompetence.
Or you could have just kept Brandon Knight. I would have more trust in that.
It seems like he's not going to be ready for the start of the season with the whole new knee issue.
Yeah.
He had. I think that played a role in them dealing him, but the point guard market wasn't that great, but they signed Ariza on the first day.
Yeah.
So either they had a really good either they had a really really strong idea they weren't going to get a point guard, or they just wanted Ariza
and were
willing to gamble.
You're right. The Redick thing made it very clear. It was like, Lowe asked him, like, oh, so you would have been in Ariza's slot. And he's like, no, I was after Ariza.
Exactly was that again? Can you explain it again?
So basically, they called Ariza, agreed. JJ was after that. So they had to move money.
This was JJ Redick on the Lowe post, Zach Lowe's
podcast.
So that
means
he said this.
There could have been a point guard. You can... This is like just guessing. There could have been them going after a point guard like Van Vliet or something, let's say, in between that. But it was not very much effort because JJ Redick heard from the Suns within midnight when Trevor Ariza talked to the Suns, because he said they called right away. And JJ agreed with the Sixers on July 2nd after talking to Indiana and hearing from the Suns. And he said, like, I was thinking about Indiana a little bit because that would have been fun. Playing with Sabonis, he said. So somewhere in there, all I gather from that is the Suns were not putting a whole lot on the point guard spot is what I'm trying to get at. So, yeah. So it's very hard to decipher if you have that information, you have them trading away their point guards in the past few years, you have no signing of a point guard, and then you trade Knight as if it wasn't. Like, I don't think they just traded him because of that knee injury. I think
there was a lot of things.
That's part of it, too. But yep. So, like, they don't, I don't know. They need to have a plan. I don't see what it is.
I'm just going to be grumpy every podcast episode we do where they this is the point guard rotation, because we're at the point now where we should be doing season preview stuff. Like, look out for your boys, Ryan. We need to talk. We need to start talking about the team outlook and everything soon, and we can't because we know that a trade is coming. Like, I just tried to talk about the whole what if this their point guard rotation is.
I'm going to prepare everyone who listens before we close this for me getting excited for either Patrick Beverley or Shaq Harrison starting. Like, because at some point when it's clear that's going to happen, I'm going to be like, all right, let's go. Let's see if Shaq Harrison can make us be like, yo, that's not a bad move by the Suns. You're wincing over there.
I can't do this again, man. I tweeted the...
Well, now you definitely can't because you've used all your vacation days and you should have saved them for
I got plenty saved up. Okay. I got plenty. Okay. This was just the start, dude. I'll just take off the rest of the NBA season. I tweeted, I can't remember what it was in reference to.
But you're right, I want to talk about the Suns, yeah.
Okay, it was in, I tweeted, it was in reference to the point guard thing, and I was like, everyone replies to me and says, point guard trade's coming, do you know something? And it's just me being a logical NBA person. But there's a part of me that's also like, this is just how logic works, and sometimes there's not logical thing involved, or there is, and there's just other things like what we're talking about, where the Suns are at a push comes to shove with value and they're not willing to go there yet. I tweeted during the season, a 5-0 Suns run cuts the lead, cuts the deficit down to 31 or 27 or 45 or whatever it was. I kept tweeting that over and over again every time it happened, just to accentuate how painful it was to watch this team with how bad they sucked. And just you talking about Shaq Harrison starting opening night without Devin Booker and DeAndre is the number one option offensively or something.
Fault. I'm going to enjoy watching Shaq Harrison. That's my whole deal. Like, I just want to get to that point where we know.
I can't talk about RJ Barrett's jump shot in November, man. I cannot do it.
Then we'll talk about Shaq Harrison's jump.
It's yeah, and then there's the whole like they're gonna lose, and while Doncic looks like he has like 17-5-7, just looking real nice out there, and it's gonna hurt.
We'll wrap with positive news for our boy, Alan Williams, Big Sauce, signed a 2-way deal with the Nets today. That kind of also Kobe Simmons signed with the Cavs, and Tyler Ulis worked out with them and apparently did not get signed with the Cavs, so...
Oh, yeah, he was part of that group workout, right?
Yeah, so this kind of confirms my whole, I think Alan Williams is still an NBA player. I'm not sure about Ulis.
Yeah, especially so. For a team like the Nets, who I think it was Michael Scotto tweeted, like, they were looking for rebounding. It's like, if you're looking for rebounding on the market, there's no one better than Sauce.
Yeah.
And they have a nice young big already in Jared Allen. Sauce gives you a completely different dynamic. Allen is like this 7-foot skilled kind of
his weight is in his wing, really, his limbs, and Big Sauce's is not in his limbs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Kevin just did a wingspan demonstration in the studio.
It's like 5'8".
But Sauce is like just a completely different type of pace, and I really like that signing. 2-way contract, so who knows if he's actually going to be in their rotation or not. But if we know anything about Big Sauce and watching him over a year and a half, it's that whenever he's going to get an opportunity, he is going to take advantage of it, because that is literally the story of his basketball career. When he was at college, he put up redonkulous numbers. When he went to Summer League, he put up insane numbers, didn't get signed, so he goes to China. Guess what he does? Puts up insane numbers. There was a game in Indiana, not last season, but two seasons ago, where he just got 15, 17 minutes a run or whatever, and he put up like 17 and 9. And that's just what he does. He produces.
He's one of the 10 best rebounders, like rate-wise.
Yeah. He just produces over and over again, and then you come to this year, and he has the injury, which is just brutal. But every time he plays, he produces. He's going to get a chance in Brooklyn, and he's going to produce for Brooklyn. And I think they're really going to like what they have in him, and as the Suns did to a certain extent, but it appears they are transitioning forward into the Rashawn Holmes era. Feel the fever, Kevin.
I feel it.
I like Rashawn Holmes, but...
You can have whatever you want. It's your birthday. Thanks for listening, everyone. That's Kellen Olson. I'm Kevin Zimmerman. We'll be back.
Sorry for drowning everyone out there. That got real dark at the end again, but... We need a point guard. This is just
what's
going
to
happen.
We know.
Yeah, we need a point guard. All right. Thanks for listening, everyone.